This is Potions and Potpourri. It's been a minute since we've actually recorded, so excuse us for our rusty opening. This is Keisha.
This is Kayla.
And we are your hosts for this podcast where we talk about all things Dungeons and Dragons. We'll just sit here and have chats about certain topics. Sometimes we're bringing in other people to interview. Sometimes we'll even do a live play, and we'll also do a potion segment where that's still kind of in the works, where we just kind of improv things on the spot and just create something. It's been a minute, Kayla.
It has. It won't seem like it once we release this episode, but we took a little bit of an unexpected hiatus.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice because we were able to, we were kind of just pumping stuff out, you know, and kind of caught up to us, and we'd had so many episodes banked that we were able to keep up, and then all of a sudden we were out of episodes and we weren't recording anything. We were like, oh shit.
Oh no.
But we're back on track, and we've still been pretty active on Instagram and stuff. So yeah, here we are. So the icebreaker question for today that I wanted to ask about was, what are some of your favorite examples of anime, manga, graphic novels being turned into movies or shows?
Deadpool. 100%.
Yeah.
That, like,
it was an excellent
blew me
movie.
Away. Like, they finally got him right after that X-Men fiasco.
Yep.
Or, I guess it was technically, like, Wolverine. I don't even remember what that movie is. We don't care. Deadpool is amazing. I love that one.
Well, and Ryan Reynolds really put in the effort to make sure it was good. He was like, it has to be R-rated or I won't do it.
Yep. We have to do it right. Because I was born on this earth to be this character. Are we talking just strictly live action or also if they're animated too?
Yeah.
I know that there is a movie out there about Batman, but it's in like feudal Japan?
Wow.
Is that correct? Is that how you say that word?
Feudal. Yes.
Yeah, that one. That seems super cool because I think it's like they're like samurais running around and stuff, and like the animation is super different.
Oh, it's animated.
Yes.
Wow.
I really want to see that.
Interesting.
That looks dope. I don't remember what it's called. I did not prep in any way for this question, but that's fine. I'm sure someone out there knows what I'm talking about. Yeah, and I like, as I mean, I know I just said the X-Men movies were kind of terrible, but I also kind of like them.
Did you read the comics?
No, which is probably why I like the movies.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, if we're talking about ones that we liked. Yeah, it's mostly Deadpool. That's all I can do.
I mean, that's a great adaptation for sure.
Yeah, it is. Did you have a couple in mind?
Well, I didn't read them, but I know just from people talking about it forever, Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
You know, I always hear how true, at least Brotherhood, how true it was to the manga, which I didn't read, but it's just really cool.
I have the series if you want to read it.
I probably should, honestly. I've watched the show enough. I'm rewatching it right now with my partner, but yeah, I bet it would be pretty interesting to follow along.
Yeah, it definitely would be. I know Brotherhood, like you said, did follow it. I actually do still like the original Fullmetal anime that came out too.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it was a bit darker and heavier, which I really liked. And the story went interesting.
They're pretty different.
I don't think it was bad. So
they're the same for like the first bit of the story,
mm-hmm.
and then regular Full Metal just kind of ends without ending the story, but then Brotherhood actually like finishes it all, and it does get pretty dark.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, yeah, Full Metal itself has its moments.
Yeah. I'm also I don't have an opinion on it yet, but I'm in the process of watching an adaptation of a graphic novel that I've really enjoyed, which is called Why the Last Man, which we've talked about before. Where a plague kills everything with a Y chromosome.
Right.
And the graphic novel is a little older, and so as I'm rereading it now, I'm realizing that there's some outdated language in there around men and women, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it's written by a man and co-written by a woman, and the lead artist is a woman, and it's a very diverse team in the graphic novel. And the show's been pretty interesting, but again, I don't have an opinion because it's been pretty different from the graphic novel so far, but I don't know that I dislike it.
Sure.
And they kind of have updated a lot of the language and issues from it. So that's actually been really cool because that's just a really interesting concept
in general. The idea.
So yeah. I think that's a good one. And then I also really liked Margaret Atwood's
The Handmaid's Tale?
Yep. I really liked the book, and then I watched the show and was pretty into it. And then I had some opinions about the end, and now it's still going, so.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. I need to read those, because you were the one that introduced me to Agwood.
Yeah.
With Oryx and Crake.
Did you read those?
Yes. Those were good.
Yes.
I really enjoy her writing style.
My partner actually just started reading those again, now. He's in the middle of reading Oryx and Crake. Yeah, the thing with The Handmaid's Tale is that the book's really good, and the first season follows the book pretty well, but then it just changes so much so they can keep making seasons.
Yeah.
I think I'm just bitter because the Oryx and Crake trilogy is enough content to make an entire series.
Yeah, that should be a show!
And instead of a 200-page novel, that's like four seasons.
Yeah.
I get it, it's like much more like politically relevant to the times and stuff, but... I just am like, nah, I'd rather have Oryx and Crake.
Yeah, seriously. There are some times I wish they would understand that there are some shows that if you kept it to that season, it's perfection.
Oh, that reminds me of Good Omens.
Ah, I actually just read that recently, and I want to see...
Oh, the show is so good. It's like, I mean, they adapted it amazingly. And
nice.
David Tennant and Michael Sheen,
yep.
They're so awesome.
I need to see it.
And the book is hilarious. I mean, they're making a second season now, which they said they weren't going to, but...
Oh, I didn't know that.
But, okay. You know, Neil Gaiman is, like, the show writer, so he's writing
good.
The entire show, and it just all really makes sense.
Good.
It's really good.
I want to see that.
And that's a pretty rare instance of a book being well adapted into a show.
Yeah, so, again, this is going to be very controversial, so ones that are terrible... that have been adapted, as I'm sure many of us know, is Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh my, I haven't seen
it. You haven't seen
it? Movie. No.
But I'm not gonna lie, that's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine when I watch it, because it's so bad, I kind of like it, because it's something to laugh at.
It's like one of those things where I've been told it's really, really bad. Like, I know it's horrible, and that I should never watch it, but it's like a car wreck, you know, like, I want to watch it because I know it's going to be so bad.
But
I also don't want to because I think I'm just going to be upset.
Oh, you will be. We need to watch it together sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, oh man.
I think maybe if I just got really stoned and I just like knew it was going to be bad, I could enjoy it.
Yep. I think that will help. Oh man. Yeah. Like those kind of movies, like The Golden Compass and...
I heard that was bad too. I've read the book but not seen the movie.
Nope. The
Bummer.
Movie's pretty bad.
Harry Potter was a good adaptation for the
Harry
most
Potter
part.
Was pretty great.
Lord of the Rings was pretty excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the extended version. If you can sit through all that. Yes.
Always. I can always sit through that.
Always.
I personally am a Lord of the Rings fan a little bit more than a Harry Potter fan, but that's just me.
I'm the other way.
Oh, you know, another interesting example is Game of Thrones. Started out really, really good, like, literally, like, line for line, book to movie translation, and then just very quickly went to the shitter.
Yeah, you could tell at that point when the writer himself was just like, yeah, I think I'm done, bye.
And we both read Game of Thrones, you were the one that got me into it, and then I had been watching the show before I started reading the books, so then I read all of the books, and then I watched the show again, so I kind of had, like, a little bit of back and forth between the two, and getting... Of course, it took so long for the show to come out, and we never got the last book, and we never will.
We never will.
So it was just like, well, at that point, I was like, well, what's going to happen? Because we don't know, as readers, because the story hasn't ever finished. So it was kind of interesting to see where they took it, and then at that point, it's a totally different story.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay.
Okay, well, this isn't canon, though.
Yeah, you just have to take it with a grain of salt.
Right?
I actually kind of watch that again.
It's good.
So violent.
I'd definitely rewatch it again.
Well, that was quite the tangent, but...
Yeah, it was a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, what we are going to talk about today has nothing to do with what we've been talking about for the past 10 minutes.
Nothing at all.
So today's topic in regards to D&D is about items. And it's just kind of a broader, like, our personal experience with some of the items that we've been using... and some of the ones that have been created during our campaigns, and just how we've used them, how they've affected our campaigns, and just that kind of stuff. One of the things, it's kind of funny, that Kayla looked up was, what was it, like the top 10 most game-breaking items?
Yes.
And it's funny because
we played
at least three
of them.
Yeah. we've played with are on that list, and it makes sense.
I was laughing, so I was like, yeah, we've used that. Using that, I have that in my inventory right now. Yeah, okay.
Oh boy, oopsies. Didn't even know.
Yeah.
God.
So do you have, like, kind of just general rules for items in your game? Like, they have to be this level, or I won't let you use these kinds of items, or they have to fit the theme of the story, or whatever.
Mostly no, which I'm finding is a mistake.
Yeah, okay.
Because, the way I like to use items is if it fits the campaign, or if it fits the character.
Yeah,
you know, if it, like, helps them on their personal quest, or if it, like, fits their personality.
Yeah.
That's what I prefer. But then I don't read them, and then I give them out, and then people are like, oh, fuck, yeah, I just got this thing that makes me completely immune to fire. And I'm like, oh, no.
So it's like,
oh,
this one's pretty.
Shit.
It's shiny.
I should have read it. Yeah. That has definitely led me into some trouble. Like, if you're one of those DMs where you don't want certain things to happen, or your players to do certain things, maybe read your items first. Wow. Don't just be like, hey, you get to go to a shop, and as a reward, like, if you pay, I don't know, 50 gold, I'll just randomly flip to a page in the book and just pick an item.
No.
Don't do that.
Do you try and go by, like, type, though? Like, rare, wondrous?
I try to keep that with the levels that you guys are at.
Yeah, okay.
So I'll start with, like, you know, the common and then uncommon, and slowly bump up the rarity,
mm-hmm.
depending on your level more or so. When I make my own items, though, apparently that goes out the window, and I accidentally give you something that is way too powerful for you.
Yes, that's happened a lot.
And it sucks for me. No wonder I can't get a good enough battle, because everything has to be, like, almost three times your level for it to be any sort of competition at all, but...
Do you have a system for, like, distributing items, or do you just, like, sometimes roll a die to see what we'll get, or is it just, like you said, like, flip to a page?
The main draw to me for D&D, or at least any kind of tabletop game that involves dice, I love the randomness.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be all purely prep. So that's literally why I have, like, that magical lady that you guys sometimes go to, and it'll literally be like, oh, you just pay a price, and the price will be from this point and this point, and you will get anywhere between an uncommon to a rare item.
Wow.
You know, just anywhere in there. And then if you pay more, it'll be from rare to wondrous, you know, and just see what happens.
Yeah.
That's how you guys have ended up with most of your really crazy, stupid, amazing items.
Well, to be fair, it's hard as a DM to keep track of all of the items.
It is.
So to even, like, make a list of, like, here are rare items that you are allowed to have is still pretty extensive, you know?
Yeah.
Because you want to be like, oh, well, this item is really powerful, so I'm going to make sure that they're not allowed to have it, so everything but this item? Because then you, as a DM, would have to read every item.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, who would?
Yeah, exactly. And again, I like the randomosity of it, where it's just like, I don't even know what this does. Let's read. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I don't know. It's kind of fun that way, too. And I like when I give you guys something and you get super excited about it. You know, you're like, oh, man, I can't wait to use this in a situation where this is going to shine. And I'm just like, yeah. Yay, you!
So then it's your job to kind of make something down the road that makes it hard for us to use that item.
Right. Or, like, challenge it, especially. Or if you guys end up rolling a lot of nat ones, I'll be like, you lose your item.
Yeah.
If we throw it across the room.
Yeah, exactly.
Give it a break. Yeah, my main thing is, ideally, I like, or at least when I make up items, I want it to be much more personalized for that person and much more related to what you're doing or fitting the theme of the game.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And those are fun to do.
Do you homebrew items?
I have a couple times. Yeah. I don't put too much thought into it. Like, one of them was a dagger in one of the campaigns that you're in. And it's where when you cut someone, it doesn't do much damage, but it'll absorb that blood.
Yeah.
And then it transforms it into a ruby.
So yeah, that's right.
Yep. But because of that, and a lot of other reasons, like the way it was used in, like, the past and everything, those are illegal. So if your characters are caught using that, or they see a glint of the hilt or anything, or they see those specific kinds of rubies, then your characters would immediately get arrested, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I like so trying to have that balance.
You can't just go sell them willy-nilly.
No,
so it's not
at all
that useful, really.
Like, you can keep it, you know, and have a bunch of rubies to sell to somebody, probably sketchy.
Or use them as magical properties or something.
Yeah, exactly. You have whatever uses you could think of, but there's a cost of, if in any way someone sees that, like, you are in trouble.
Trade them for drugs.
Right. That's what they're there for.
Yep.
And there's some items where it's like, oh, I made this, like, very special flower that you guys have encountered, and it turns out to be a cure to this disease that's going on right now, you know, and you have to take care of it and package it correctly. And like, if you guys get attacked a certain way and that person's bag gets crushed, like, you might lose it and that kind of stuff. It doesn't necessarily do something like attack wise or anything, but it's a very important item anyway.
It's special,
right? And you guys have to figure out what to do with it, where to take it, etc., if you even want to. But going back to some of the ones that I'm sure our listeners will especially know. One of the most memorable items to me that we have used so far in our campaigns, number one, is the deck of many things.
Yeah, that's such a crazy item.
I allowed that in my campaign.
Pretty, like,
oh boy.
Not early on, but medium on. Like, I don't know, we must have been mid-level, like, lower than 10.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, right?
I think
so. The first time that we were able to draw from it.
Yeah.
Wow. And we played with a full deck, so we played with the 22 cards, which has some extra flair.
Yeah, we'll call it flair. Yeah, it was kind of funny, though, because when I first introduced it to you guys, most of you were like, I don't want that. No, take that. No.
I was stoked, because I know that the deck of many things is scary, but it has, because didn't we look it up? It's like, not quite 50-50, but it was like 51-49% bad and good.
Yeah, there's like neutral cards, then there's the bad ones, and then there's the good ones. And there's more good and neutral than bad.
Yeah, exactly. So we realized it was worth the risk.
Right. What could go wrong?
And what's cool about the deck of many things that I've just learned recently is that except for like two of the cards, when you draw them, they disappear, but then they go back into the deck. So you have a chance to draw the same card twice.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a fun deck. It's really interesting. It could really change your game.
Yeah. And talk about, like, random, you know?
Yep. And we have a list of the ones that we have pulled. We haven't pulled many. I think it's only 7 total that we've actually gotten.
Yeah.
And they're mostly good, to be honest.
And this was in the Rift campaign that we're currently playing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 7 for 5 people is not that much.
No. Again, like, some of you guys refused to
touch
it.
I think we were scared,
yeah.
Especially because, like, whatever the first one was pretty scary.
Yeah, I think one of the first ones that was drawn, it was the Void, where that player got, like, transported to a random place, and he was put inside, like, an object, like a soul or something, and then that was, like, guarded by a creature.
Mm-hmm.
That was a whole quest, because everybody's like, well, we just lost one of our people, and we were gonna do this, but we can't, because we have to,
And so you made it so that his soul went into a rubber ducky.
He was a rubber ducky.
And it was in a pocket dimension controlled by this, like, poltergeist that is basically, like, a game show host that plays with our souls.
He was fun.
What a quest to save we almost didn't save him.
Yeah.
We almost, because he had a backup character, so we're just like, I don't know. Fuck
don't
it.
Know.
You're a rubber ducky, dude.
Yeah.
See you later.
Do we really need to have that?
But it ended up being like a side quest for us to go save his soul.
Yeah. And that's another thing that, one of the things I like about the deck is it could give you a whole extra quests that you didn't even plan and just have them go do this crazy thing for a second and then get back to, you know, whatever the main storyline is. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, another one that we drew, which I haven't forgotten about, but I bet other people have, because it's kind of really easy to forget, but was the Rogue card.
Yep.
And that's a non-player character of the DM's choice, so an NPC that we've met before, suddenly becomes hostile to us. And we don't know the identity of the person, and we don't know that they're hostile to us.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing less than a wish spell or divine intervention can end the hostility towards us.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't encountered that yet.
Nope.
And that happened a while ago.
Yep.
And I've just been kind of, I'm like, we're meeting an NPC. All right. Meet up with our friends. Cool. I hope they don't try and kill us later. Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't happen during
really
like, the
stressful
final battle. Or...
Oh my god, it probably is. And you know, we know a lot of NPCs and we're on mixed terms with a lot of people.
So it's really hard to really pinpoint who it might even be.
I mean, honestly, like, any of the NPCs could be pissed at us, but it's probably somebody that's, like, our friend. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, we'll see.
One of the other cards that we drew from the deck was the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I got this card, and I was fucking stoked.
You got so many good ones.
I know, I got really good.
Stupid.
I got lucky.
Yeah, you got the Sun, where you gained 50,000 experience and a wondrous item, which is one of the items we'll talk about next.
Yep, which magically appears in my hands.
Yep.
And
you just have it.
I happened to just level up. So we were like level 13. I leveled up to level 14 almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just a level ahead of everybody in my party.
Yep.
Yeah, that was pretty sick. I've honestly, I've gotten really lucky drawing the good cards.
Yeah, because another one you drew was Gem. So you're just like packed with money.
Yeah.
You're the richest person, ironically.
Yeah, 25 pieces of jewelry that are worth 2,000 gold each. Or 50 gems worth 1,000 gold each. So I got 50,000 gold.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And we got to the point where we just weren't even counting it. Because there was, like, no way I was going to be able to spend 50,000 gold on anything.
Right.
I mean, I guess I started, like, a charity in my name and everything. And, like, I'm funding research and all this. But, you
You're
know
such
what?
A good person.
I'm basically a billionaire. So yeah. We just don't even count my money anymore.
It's really great, though. Because sometimes the other characters, because everybody has their own separate goal, they'll be like, hey, Kayla, you wanna
buy me something?
Give me some stuff?
Not really, if I'm being honest.
It's so good.
I know I'm lawful good, but that doesn't mean I'm just going to give my money away.
I'm so glad that you, of all people, got it. So everybody else would just immediately spend it on kinds of ridiculous stuff.
Hookers and blow.
Nah, I'll just save it.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Put it in the chest in the basement.
Yeah, just, we don't need that much,
build
right?
An orphanage.
And then, let's see, another kind of interesting one was Throne.
Mm-hmm. That one is really cool.
That one is super cool.
Really, it took us a while to kind of figure that one out.
You gain proficiency in persuasion, you double your proficiency bonus on checks made with that skill, which is absurd. You guys and your persuasion, really annoying.
We're all really persuasive.
Side note. Anyways, in addition, you gain rightful ownership of a small keep somewhere in the world, but it is in the hands of monsters, which you must clear out to, claim the keep as yours. Which, that was a really fun side quest that we did.
I wasn't there, but yeah, that made it another side quest for us to go claim this castle for our Loxodon character.
Right.
And yeah, they fought some monsters, and now they have, like, a flying, magical, impenetrable castle in the sky.
Yep. It's great.
I'm sure you're happy about that.
It's fine. You guys needed some kind of base, and I know that you guys...
I disagree, but well. Okay.
All of the other people in that group are obsessed with having, like, 20 different home bases for some reason.
We have so much fucking real estate in every game we play. It doesn't matter, but we always have, like, 2 or 3 hideouts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because the world is big, you know? You have to have a home in all of them.
Yeah, you gotta have a rest stop in each place.
And they probably also know, because I am notorious for waiting until you guys are, like, decently high level, and I take away your home base, and
that's true.
Do all of this, so maybe
that's
my
fair.
Fault.
We probably learned that from you.
No regrets. And then let's see one that what was it? Vizier. This was the one that was drawn by an NPC.
Oh,
so the NPC has it.
Oh.
Not you guys, because it was something like the NPC was desperate. He's this little kid, for context, that has been following these guys around. And everyone's like, I guess we'll keep him because he has good information, but my god, he's annoying. So he managed to draw a card from the deck, got the Vizier. You can ask a question in meditation and mentally receive a truthful answer to that question. So I basically said that you can ask any question at all, and I will give you the full answer.
Yeah.
Like, you will know inside and out
it's
everything about it. Mm-hmm. You guys still have that and haven't used it yet.
I thought so. I think we know that. We've discussed it a few times. We just are like, we didn't want to waste it. But it's kind of one of the, it's kind of like when you play a video game, you have like a really high powered item that can break, or like a high level potion or something that's like one use only.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I'll just save it for when I need it. And then you just never use it.
Oh, wait, maybe not this boss, next boss. Well, the next boss has to be strong.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just there forever.
And now we're almost at the end of this campaign, so it's like we might as well use it.
Yeah, just see what happens. And then the final card we got was Skull, which we haven't, I haven't actually utilized that one just yet. You summon an Avatar of Death for that character. So I'm just holding that one for right now because there was just so much other stuff going on at the time. I was like, yeah, we'll just reel that back for a little bit. I don't have a whole story for it. Why did it take so long? Why did it choose you? And blah, blah, blah. That's for later. It's fine. Which is funny because everybody forgot about it. Because we talked about it earlier.
I know.
Like, oh, I don't remember that one.
I don't remember it.
It's like, good.
Yep, can't wait. Just more spice to the end game.
Basically.
It's going to be so spicy.
Yeah, those are the cards that we've drawn so far on the deck.
Just that the deck is so, it's so exciting. It's almost like the Wild Magic and Sorcerer. Like, you never know what you're going to get. And it's a risk because some of them are really bad. Like, the one where you lose 10,000 XP.
Yep.
You don't go down a level, luckily, but still. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
This one would wreck you guys.
If we lose all of our wealth.
All forms of wealth that you carry or own.
Businesses, buildings, and property that you own are lost that you can never return. Yeah, we'd be fucked. Majorly fucked.
Oh, man. Yeah, like, there is some stuff. You guys got pretty lucky with what you've drawn so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you keep going, I mean...
I know, there's some interesting ones in there. Some of them happened... kind of similarly without using the deck, like the idiot card.
Yeah,
that was just from a spell, though.
I had no idea what the spell was until I used it and read it.
Enfeeblement. Fun stuff.
It's such a good spell. Use it, guys.
No, don't use it. It's scary.
It's kind of better than Finger of Death, honestly.
Use it on your enemies, not on your friends.
Do it on your friends. But yeah, that's definitely one of the ones that stood out to me the most. Let's go back to that. So you drew a card where it gave you a wondrous item. What was that item, Kayla?
I chose the Helmet of Teleportation, which was apparently on the list of game-breaking items.
Go figure.
So the Helmet of Teleportation lets you cast the teleport spell 3 times a day. Or maybe it was like 1d3 and I rolled a 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it recharges every short or long rest.
Yeah.
So it's basically infinite.
It's terrible.
Because why would you teleport 3 times in a short rest? I don't know. It does have a caveat, so it's not like super powerful, but it's been really useful for us because you can teleport up to, I think, 8 people that you can touch. So as long as everybody's touching, And there's a whole chart, but the caveat is that you roll a 100, and it's a matter of how well you know the location, kind of up to the DM's discretion. So it's like, is it known? Is it like a personal, like you grew up in this house, so obviously you know every detail. And then you get a kind of a range out of the 100 of how accurate your teleporting is. And I failed a few times trying to teleport to somewhere. And we take psychic damage from it.
Oh, yeah.
If we fail. Or you could end up not quite where you said you were going to go, which can be very... scary, obviously. So it's powerful, but there is like a...
there's definitely a cost.
Yes.
For sure. And you've paid it numerous times.
I have. But I still use it because it's pretty fucking helpful.
I mean, it's definitely gotten you guys out of a couple pickles, yeah.
Yeah, so the Helm of Teleportation has been really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, we got it kind of at a higher level. And this is one of the first games we've played where somebody that was a magic user didn't have a spell like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our previous homebrew games, we've had either a wizard or a warlock that has had some kind of ability, either planar shift or teleport or whatever.
Yeah.
Or items available to help us. So this is the first time we've finally been able to just move freely.
Yeah. Definitely can see how it's a game breaking though.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's just pop over here.
Yeah. We can take some psychic damage. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Especially if you're a higher level. Do you even notice it? What is another one? I know there's another one that was really important to a previous campaign that we've done,
mm-hmm.
where we were both players,
mm-hmm.
and we apparently learned that that item is ridiculous.
Yep, another huge game-breaking item. So our first homebrew campaign, we've talked about this before, but we were so high level that we were playing in the Abyss. So we were literally going over to the Abyss to start fighting demons and devils. And my player was a tiefling who was originally neutral evil, but slowly became chaotic evil because she wanted to take the place of Orcus, the demon lord. And hopefully you guys know what we're talking about, but Orcus is like almost like the Demogorgon version of the demon.
Yeah,
world.
Super crazy high level.
He's like super powerful, super scary,
yeah.
like a world eater demon that controls the Abyss.
And we were like, well, we're bored. Why not? Let's follow along
yeah,
with this.
That's what happened.
We killed everything else. What could possibly stop us?
Yeah, we were already in limbo. So then the next logical step was to just go to the Abyss. But so my character was trying to kill and take over the position of the demon lord Orcus. And Orcus was imprisoned. And our DM started giving us quests to go collect the pieces of the Wand of Orcus, mm-hmm. which is a real item, and it is super OP.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
It's one of those ones that, because you know it's high level, if it says, yeah, this item is sentient?
Yes.
For one thing, it's like, oh, no.
Yeah, so the Wand of Orcus is sentient, and it has a 16 intelligence, a 12 wisdom, and a 16 charisma.
Wow.
It's also chaotic evil.
Wow.
And it answers to Orcus completely, but it will... So first of all, when you pick it up, you have to make a constitution saving throw. And if you pass, you take... So yeah, you have to when you pick it up, you have to make a pretty high constitution saving throw. And on a save, you take 10d6 necrotic damage.
Wow.
On a save!
Save. What's the fail?
You die.
Okay.
And come back as a zombie.
Oh my god! You risked that? Did you know?
No, so I think... and that's kind of what I was leading into, but I think our DM, because he made it a quest to collect the pieces, he actually made, like, a custom sheet for the Wand of Orcus, and so we started out with just the skull, because it's, like, a skull with, like, vertebrae is, like, the wand part. And actually the whole story is that the skull is, like, this high-level adventurer that fought Orcus, and Orcus killed him and, like, trapped his soul, like, in the positive energy plane, and... or his soul, and made his skull into the weapon. It's pretty crazy.
That's pretty cool.
But so we ended up finding the skull first, and then I think the way my DM did it is each piece we got gave me a little bit more of that power.
That's right, yeah.
Because otherwise it would have been fucking OP.
Like too much at once.
I mean, not that we would have won, but... and, you know, we were level 16 at this point, like pretty high.
Yeah, and there were a lot of us, too. Note that.
Yeah.
There's so many of us.
I mean, the wand already has a lot of features, but so what we were talking about earlier, so I'm pretty sure I still had to make a save and I still took damage, but I had to like attune to it. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what happened is I would take damage when I would attune to it.
Mm.
But it also gives you minor properties, either positive or negative. And we would kind of, so the first piece was the skull and we got one positive and one negative minor property. And then each piece added either a positive or negative property.
Mm.
So some of the properties we had, we didn't even finish building it before my character died. So like the first property I got was that I was proficient in Arcana. But then the detrimental property that I had was that nobody within 300 feet of me can ever sleep.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, all right, you
yeah.
in the corner.
So and we were like sleeping in the Abyss.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to sleep like in an empty building that we cleared out of demons and hope that nobody tried to kill me.
Right.
Another detrimental property was that the first time I touch a gem or a piece of jewelry, it diminishes the value by half. So I wasn't allowed to, like, loot any treasure.
Don't touch anything! And
yeah.
stay away from us!
One of the big things with the Wand of Orcus that I had, but that we kind of also adjusted, is the Call Undead feature.
Mm-hmm.
Which you raise a zombie army, and it's equal to, the full power is equal to 500 HP. So however many zombies it would take to have 500 health
so
points.
Many.
And they just fight for you mindlessly.
So many.
But so, for example, with just the skull, it was 250. Once we had two other pieces, it was 350. And on and on.
That was a fun way to use that item. It wasn't just you straight up get it and use all the things. Yeah. It's like, no, you're slowly building it piece by piece.
Yeah, and I think it was a really good idea on our DM's part because we were able to get the swan and it had to do with the story because we were trying to take over Orcus and he couldn't just give it to us. Mm-hmm. And then also it was like part of the quest because we were searching for all the pieces and the wand wanted to be found, you know? And what else is interesting about the Wand of Orcus is that it will convince the person it's attuned to that it is on its side. And this played really heavily into our story, but it was basically like, oh yeah, like you should go kill Orcus and take over. You're going to be the demon lord. I'm going to help you. You know, we'll do whatever you need to do to take over. And the whole time it's trying to just get back to Orcus and its entire objective is to just kill.
Yep. It's like, oh yeah, you can totally beat him. It's gonna fuck you up.
And what happened is we got captured in the castle, and my body was sacrificed, and Orcus came back and was the ruler of the Abyss again.
So the wand won.
But, you know, that's just like a really good example of how our DM took a really game-breaking item and made it more usable, even at such a high level for us.
Right.
I don't know if we would have ever even gotten the full wand of Orcus put together.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we won't know now.
We won't know now because I'm dead and the wand is gone.
And everybody's like, well, that was fun. Bye. Peace.
But yeah, that was like a really cool, and I was telling Keisha this earlier when we were talking about this, but I feel guilty because I was still a relatively new player. It was our first campaign. I didn't quite understand all the mechanics. Reading the sheet that he gave me now, it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
But at the time, I was like, what the fuck?
What does this all mean?
How do I call undead? Power word kill, do all of these things at once, like search for the missing pieces. And I was just like too overwhelmed. So I didn't really, much to my DM's dismay, I didn't really get to use the wand, even as it was, to its fullest potential.
Yeah.
But I had it and it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's the thing when you're trying to give out items to your players, that's one of the good things about reading ahead of time. That way you're like, do they even know what this is or how to use it? Is it too soon? Like, it's good to kind of get that, you know, figured out and adjust accordingly.
Right.
Because like you said, you had no idea about half that stuff and didn't really know how to use it or what it did or anything. So you probably didn't. And it's a lot. Like,
it was.
Some of the more complicated items are just like literal pages of stuff.
I know.
It's insane. I've never yet used an item that's quite like that, where there's just so many things to it, because I have to figure it out, and there's so much work.
Yeah.
I'm lazy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, items are fun. There's so many different ways people use them. Like, sometimes it's like, oh, this is the whole reason you're doing a quest, is to get this really cool object, you know? Get the sword of ruling the world. That's what it's
called.
Sword
of Gith. That was an item we had.
There's one. Or it's just, like, fun loot to have every now and then. I don't really use that as much. When you, like, kill an enemy and you, like, loot the bodies.
Right. We don't do that very much, do we?
No, not really. I've noticed that. It's kind of more interesting when you go to, like, a certain dungeon or something, and in it, you have something really cool and special looking, and you have to, like, make your way towards it, and when you get that item, you know, and I literally did that once, but you guys literally just walk right by.
I remember that story, and that actually reminded me of another kind of homebrew thing you did, where we, and it's because of this first example that the second example happened. But the first example is that you were put us in, like, a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
It was an underground tunnel, like, Dwarven tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And all the gems were cursed.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before on another episode.
Oh, my God. I forgot about this.
But we were like, ooh, gems! And we were, like, super into, like, pillaging at the time. So we're like, yeah, let's take all the shit.
And, like, I didn't even have to describe it that much. I was like, oh, yeah, so you enter, and already there's this an abandoned cart of gems. We loot it. Okay.
And what were some of the effects? Do you remember?
I really don't remember. This was a while ago. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot about this. I know you guys had to roll, and there were just a bunch of different ones. Like, some of them might blind you. Some of them causes confusion.
Right.
One of them, I think, caused insanity.
Yeah.
And just all kind of, like, everybody.
Explosions.
Just, like, one guy was like, I grab a handful. And I'm like, okay. Please, like, roll 10 d6s and tell me their numbers.
Oops.
It was so funny.
But because of that situation, we were a lot more cautious going in to dungeons, and you're like, ooh, there's gems. And we're like, no, we're good.
Yeah,
we're
good. We keep going. Oh, there's a closed door, and something shines, but we keep walking. Okay. Oh, look, there's a sword just laying before you. It looks pretty normal. We walk over it. We don't touch it. Okay. I was just going to give it to you for free, but whatever, man.
Another good example that Keisha, that maybe you can talk about briefly, is the Vorpal weapons you've introduced in the Rift campaign.
That's right. So, another one of the things that I kind of made in my campaign is a material. And this material is super special in the way it works. It casts a very different kind of magic and absorbs all others. And I called it Vorpal, which I don't know if anybody got that, but that's from Alice in Wonderland.
No, I didn't know that.
And because it's something about, I can't remember the exact passage, but against the Jabberwocky.
Oh, yeah.
There's the Vorpal sword, and there's like discussion on what does Vorpal mean? Vorpal's not a word, and like, is it a material? Is it just like a description?
Oh, cool.
So I decided to use that. Yeah, and that's the material that has appeared from the impact of the rift when it hit a desert, and it kind of glassed over, and that's what made it the Vorpal material.
And they're all really powerful weapons and like materials and armor and stuff made out of this stuff. So it's like, be really nice to have them, but
yep, there's always a cost to everything, because I literally gave you a whole blacksmith who has the material and is willing to give it to you, but there's a price to it where you have to kind of convert to the Vorpal itself. And you have to follow the main creature who even made the rift. It's like a whole thing. Because I don't like always giving stuff away for free.
Yeah, of course not. There's always a price.
Yeah, exactly. Which I understand why you guys ignore everything now. But but yeah, that was pretty fun to make. Like, you just have your own. It could be reskinning items that's already in there, but you're like, oh yeah, instead of like this really cool electric samurai sword, it's a Vorpal
sword.
Electric samurai sword, you know? And just add flavor to your own campaign.
That was really cool. And you know, we were all really excited about it, and then you were like, well, you have to promise not to kill the rift or whatever it was. We're like, ooh, you know.
I was like, ah, too much?
It's not that cool. But now, like, I think we all regret it.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, a really useful item.
Yeah.
But we just couldn't make that promise, I guess. So.
Yep. And it's kind of fun, too, because sometimes you'll make an offer where, at that time, it seems like a pretty hard no,
yeah.
But in your mind, you're like, man, should have said yes, because later on, it's going to suck without it.
I know.
Bummer, dude. Sucks to be you losers. Yeah, it's a lot of fun making that kind of stuff. And again, like I said, using that to reskin other items to make them seem a little more interesting.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of items out there that, like, I have the DM's guide and the player's manual and all this stuff, and I don't know
half of a fraction
of the stuff in there.
Yeah, we've gotten, like, in some of the shorter campaigns, we've gotten some of those, like, rare, kind of smaller, more popular items come out, like the Ring of the Ram.
Oh yeah, that was
the bashing one.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like, I guess when we played my Hunger Games campaign, one of the enemies had the Necklace of Firebolt.
Oh, that's right,
Fireball. On, and it was like 6 fireballs on the necklace that you could like take off and throw. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just fun little stuff that you get to pull out of the book sometimes you don't have to think about.
Right. And then there's like a little one, other ones where it's like, oh, it's a figurine of like a cat and you can activate it and you have a panther.
Yeah.
Like, this is fun stuff.
That just reminded me, I don't remember what the item's called, but in our first story, our Warlock Gareth had an item that was like little beans, and you could throw the beans out and they turn into animals. Do you remember that?
Oh, I don't remember them being beans.
Or whatever they were,
balls
or something.
Yeah, that's right.
You would throw them out and they would turn into little like companions that would fight for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, there's like fun stuff like that too, where like, those are the ones that I think are a bit underrated. Most people are like, oh yeah, I gotta get like the super sword of death making.
That's a thing.
Yeah. You know, they're so focused on that, but there's all kinds of really fun ones where it's like, you know, if you use it in a very specific situation, things could get interesting.
One final item that I wanted to talk about that was homebrewed. It was one of the first D&D sessions I'd ever played. Mm-hmm. Probably like third, fourth session.
And this is when I wasn't there yet.
Yeah, you weren't even playing with us yet. And one of our quests was to go to sail to sail our boat, because I was my...
To sail your boat? Yes. You don't sail?
Yes. This was before Paul's Revenge, but anyways.
Okay.
Trinity the Boat Floater.
Yeah.
Sailed the boat across the channel to this island, and it was like this group of native people that lived on this island that were very agricultural and would trade. And it was something to do with, like, pirates were attacking them.
Right.
And we went to go help them. And our DM had homebrewed, I think just on the spot, like, as we were playing, that they grew this product called Awesome Fruits these trees. Uh-huh. And Awesome Fruits made a really potent beverage called Awesome Wine.
Awesome Wine!
And it got you fucked up. Like, one cup would have you, like, blackout drunk. And we were, like, rolling constitution saves. I don't fully remember the details of it, unfortunately, but I'm pretty sure that it was, like, a healing potion, and it was very sought after because these were the only people that could make this. And the reason I say all that is because I checked my character sheet, and my level 19 character had a bottle and a half of Awesome Wine still. So it was pretty important to us because we kept keeping it around.
Yeah.
And I do remember having instances of, like, you know, trying to get some information from an NPC and getting them really drunk on Awesome Wine. And at this point, all of our people in our party were so used to it that we could hang and everybody else couldn't. So that was fun. Yeah. And I have a picture that I'll take. I just drew a little shitty picture of the awesome tree.
So
I'll put it on it. So it's fun. But that was fun, you know, because like that was one of my first instances of dealing with something like that. I'm pretty sure our DM just made it up and it's been canon for the rest of the game with other like 20 levels that we played.
That's always fun when they really take to something that you're like, it's just a throwaway, whatever. It's fun for now, but we'll forget about it later. And everyone's like, no, dude, this is awesome. We're going to use this all the time. Let's use it on our enemies. Let's do this when we have a party.
Literally,
and you're just like, wow, okay. This is a thing now. That's great. Yeah, I like items that you can use more so for the roleplay aspect as opposed to just strictly battle.
Mm-hmm.
Those are super interesting to have. We'll definitely have to delve more into what all the other items are. There's all kinds of stuff. And I mean, obviously you can find stuff online that people homebrewed and have all kinds of really fun, crazy ideas for that too.
Yeah.
I know there's like a deck of many things that's like a 90s version.
What?
Where it's like you get like Furbies
and
like stuff like that.
No way.
I encountered one time. It's just, I don't know, it's just fun to throw that stuff in there.
That is
There's
fun.
So many ways to utilize it, too. Like, we only gave you, like, a few examples of just the ones we played specifically.
Yeah.
And there's so many more. And the ways that you use them, I think that's much more fun than, like, the item itself and the special abilities that it has. It's how you use those in interesting situations.
And what it adds to your story as well.
Yeah, exactly. And some of those items, like, kind of help your character develop a little bit in certain ways, too. Or advance them to certain places. It's neat. It's endless how you can use these things.
It could also just be, like, your character gets a really cool item, and then they realize that they don't really like it, and then they sell it.
Right.
Get something else, you know?
That has happened before,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it has.
Where people will be like, hey, you know, I've had this item this whole time, and I forgot.
Yeah.
I just don't use it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly.
Or it kind of stinks if you give an item, but you never, like, a trident that manipulates water, and yet you're never near water throughout the entire campaign, so it's like, why did I do that?
Yeah, it's a shame.
That's kind of useless, I guess, but you never really know, because maybe they took the direction that way, or it was a random thing, or you didn't think about it, but...
And finally, I think, too, something cool that you've done for us that I think DMs also do pretty often is to let us collect resources and upgrade our items.
Yeah.
So let's say we got like a common magical item when we were level 5 that we've had and it's kind of not very strong anymore.
Right. But you're like, I still want to use it.
Yeah. We're like, hey, we killed this Hydra and I've got a Hydra tooth. Can I take it to like an alchemist and I don't know, grind the tooth down and get a stronger blade or whatever?
Tie it to the end of the sword.
Make it pointier. and just like kind of letting your people upgrade their items as they go.
Yeah. Because some of them, your characters might be attached to them. Like, oh, well, my character starts out with this like really shitty dagger, but it's been passed down. for generations in my family, and I want to keep it with me. Like, can I upgrade that and find things to specifically do that, you know?
One of our characters right now has that dagger that's not sharp, right?
Yes. It started out as the world's most dull dagger ever, but he decided that during, like, certain rests, he's just going to spend hours sharpening that thing. Because he was just like, I'm going to sharpen it, and I want to see what happens.
What was the point of that item?
Well, eventually he did get it sharp enough, where I told him that when you roll an 18, a 19, or a 20, you cut off a limb.
Ooh.
Automatically.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, if it's a 20, you cut off the head. It does not matter the HP of the thing you're attacking.
That's amazing.
It cuts it off.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
But if you roll a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4, you end up losing a limb yourself.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because it's kind of partially sentient a little bit. There's, like, kind of a little thing about it. But that's the thing. If you roll high enough, like, you could kill the final boss with this thing. Or you accidentally behead yourself.
Yeah,
you roll really, really bad. So
yeah, that's a fun one.
Ever since then, he has not touched it.
Mm-hmm.
He's,
he should.
He's scared of it.
Should convince him to use it some more.
That's another one I actually cry out about because it hasn't been used. But yeah, again, I like the high risk, high reward type of things, you know, because it's just kind of like, oh man, what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows?
I'm either going to regret it or I'm going to have a fun time. Yeah. Oh, there was one other thing I was going to ask you about. The bag of holding.
Oh, the bag of holding.
I feel like that should be considered kind of an OP item.
Dude, that is like the classic OP game-breaking item.
But everybody uses it, and it's like nice, obviously, in the way where you don't have to be like, oh, well, how much weight are you carrying? Well, your character can't.
Nobody does that anyways.
Blah, blah, blah. Well,
there
are people
yes,
that do.
That's fair. Not nobody.
But it's just a convenient way to be like, I just put in my bag of holding. I have all the bodies. I have all our gold.
We technically have a bag of holding, don't we?
Yes.
We have people in there.
You do. Bodies. You have bodies.
Yeah, because we didn't know with the bag of holding that if you put somebody in there, they suffocate.
Yeah.
But
there are a couple things that are, like, technically undead, so.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're fine.
Yeah.
But God. Literally so many things you guys have shoved in there, and then you just forget.
Yep.
Oh, they're just floating around in space forever. That's fine.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah. It's nice, but it's also, like, I don't know. It's a tricky one.
It is. It does have rules. I mean, so it can hold up to 500 pounds.
Right.
I
guess so. Okay.
It does say if it's overloaded, pierced, or torn, it ruptures and destroyed, and the contents are scattered in the astral plane.
So you lose everything forever.
Yeah. But I feel like that's not that. How hard is it to put 500 pounds into a bag?
I know. Yeah.
So.
But. Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was just an interesting. It's a super common item.
It is.
That's, like,
helpful.
It's super helpful, but it could also be just like, oh, yeah, no, we'll deal with it later. We'll put everything in this bag because it's basically infinite. You know, it's just like, huh.
Yeah, it's kind of more up to DM discretion of, like, if you're not going to count carry weight, when are you going to say that you have too much stuff in your bag of holding?
Right, yeah, exactly. What's your limit?
Yeah,
I think that's the general gist of at least items that we have used and have really enjoyed using and have, like, specific memories with them. And that's another fun thing, too, is that there's a lot of them where you have, like, a whole thing about it, and that's why you remember this quest. That was the whole point of it. It carries on, and you reflect on it, you know, or it's like the wine where you continue taking it with you guys.
Yep.
And use it for so many things. Yeah, what about you guys? What are some of your favorite items that you've used? What are some that you think are too game-breaking that they should not be allowed? And what are some that are just, like, crazy stories that you did not expect, but this item just, like, changed everything?
Yeah.
Whether for good or ill. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to get more stuff from us and hear from us, you can check us out at...
Instagram is the best place. Potions and Potpourri at Instagram.com. We usually post a lot of content from our games, pictures. We've been doing journal excerpts, memes, pictures of us doing stuff.
Yeah, we're definitely, that's the one that we're primarily.
Yeah, or you can email us if that's easier for you at potionsandpotpourri@gmail.com, and we have a Facebook too if that's your jam. Yeah, this has been another episode of Potions and Potpourri. I'm Kayla.
And this is Keisha. Thanks for stopping in, guys. We will catch you later.